Fall of Nixon, by James Prescott Marlowe, read by Gemma Jansen. Here we go. Kerala Jigdu. The break-in shortly after midnight on June 17, 1972, a security guard named Frank Wills was making his rounds in the Watergate complex in Washington, D.C., the curvilinear office hotel apartment building that had become one of the city's most fashionable addresses since its completion 4 years earlier. Wills discovered a piece of tape covering the latch of a door in the parking garage, which struck him as curious. He removed it. An hour later, he returned and found new tape covering the same latch. He called the police. Within minutes, officers in plain clothes arrived and found five men on the sixth floor of the complex's office building caught in the act of burglarizing the headquarters of the Democratic National Committee. The men were wearing surgical gloves. They were carrying sophisticated photographic equipment, electronic surveillance devices, large sums of cash and sequentially numbered bills, and a device for picking locks. Their leader was James McCord, a former CIA officer. They had been there before. This was a return visit to fix malfunctioning listening devices planted on an earlier entry. The five men were arrested without incident. They did not resist. They were professionals. The Washington police noted the sophistication of their equipment and the quantity of their cash and filed a report. The next morning's Washington Post carried a brief story on page A1 about the arrest of five men in what the police described as a third-rate burglary attempt. The Post's city editor, Howard Simons, assigned two reporters to follow up: Bob Woodward, 29 years old and relatively new to the paper, and Carl Bernstein, 28, a veteran of the Post's Virginia coverage. Neither man expected to be working on a major story. The Watergate break-in seemed like an odd item, the kind of bizarre Washington incident that generated a few days of coverage and then disappeared. 2 years later, the President of the United States would announce his resignation from the office he had won by the largest popular vote margin in American history. The journey from Frank Wills' discovery of a piece of tape to Richard Nixon's departure from the White House via Marine One constitutes one of the most dramatic political narratives in American history. A story about crime, power, hubris, courage, institutional resilience, and the question of whether democratic governance can enforce accountability on those who hold its highest offices. It can, but it was not easy, and it is not guaranteed. The Crime, 1972. Chapter 1. Creep. Nixon's Committee and the Culture of Dirty Tricks. Richard Nixon won the presidency in 1968 by the narrowest of margins. Less than one percentage point separated him from Hubert Humphrey in the popular vote. The victory, achieved in one of the most tumultuous years in American political history, did not make Nixon feel secure. It made him feel threatened. The man who entered the White House in January 1969 carried with him the accumulated grievances of a political career defined by narrow victories, bitter defeats, and the conviction that his enemies, the liberal press, the Eastern establishment, the Democratic Party machine, would stop at nothing to destroy him. Nixon had reason to believe this was not paranoia. He had been in national politics for more than two decades, had survived the Hiss case and the Checkers speech and the 1960 defeat and the 1960 defeat and the 1960 California disaster, and had watched his opponents use every available weapon against him. He had absorbed the lesson that political combat required not merely better arguments, but superior intelligence, superior organization, and the willingness to do what other politicians were too squeamish to attempt. What distinguished Nixon from other politicians who shared these views was the intensity of his conviction, the resources of the presidency that he brought to their implementation, and the catastrophic judgment he exercised in how far to take them. The Committee to Re-elect the President, abbreviated CREP by its critics, by its members, was established in 1971. Well over a year before the 1972 election, as the organizational vehicle for Nixon's re-election campaign. It was deliberately separate from the Republican National Committee, staffed by White House loyalists rather than party regulars, and designed to give the president's campaign operation complete operational independence from the party apparatus that might constrain its activities. The separation proved consequential. It created an organization answerable only to the White House, funded by contributions that flowed directly to the campaign rather than through the